Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Triangulation, episode 170, recorded October 6th, 2014. Phil Libin. Triangulation is brought to you by Citrix GoToAssist, the number one global market leader in remote support. Sign up for GoToAssist before October 10th, and you'll get another Citrix product free for 6 months. Visit GoToAssist.com to get started. And by NatureBox. NatureBox ships great-tasting, healthy snacks right to your door. Forget the vending machine. Start snacking smarter with healthy, delicious treats like baked cheddar potato sticks. Oh, baby. To get your free NatureBox sampler, go to naturebox.com/twit. And by audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/triangulation. It's time for Triangulation, the show where we get some of the most interesting, most articulate, smartest people who are in tech to talk for an hour about what they're up to, their lives. And this is a repeat, an encore presentation. Well, no, I mean, it's a brand new show, but our second visit from Phil Libin, who is the CEO at Evernote, and really one of the most interesting and active CEOs in the biz today. Hi, Phil. Welcome back to Triangulation.
Hey, Leo. It's great to be back.
I remember, so I started using Evernote when it first came out as a competitor to OneNote. Mm. And I think we talked about this before. And it was a long strip of paper.
Yeah. Yeah, we had the roll of toilet paper metaphor for the UI.
That was before your time, though, right?
It was, yes. It was actually two different teams that came together in 2007 to make Evernote. So there was already a company back from, I think, 2005 that was making some Windows shareware called Evernote that had a lot of cool technology and ideas.
Yeah, that's what I used, yeah. And that was that was a couple of Russian guys, right?
More than a couple, yeah.
A few. A bunch.
A bunch.
But I remember meeting them. And then, and so your company, what was your company? It wasn't Evernote at the time. It was something else.
No. So yeah, I had just exited my second startup with some of the core team. And we started, we decided we would do this human memory augmentation. And so we came up with an idea that we were calling Ribbon. Like, you know, tie a ribbon around your finger to remember stuff. And that's when I ran into Stepan Pachikov, who was the founder
that's who I met.
Yeah. Here. Yeah. And then we got together and then we recreated the company. So the modern Evernote came into being in 2007, but there are precursor companies before that.
And there was a commonality. I mean, I think Evernote is, the idea of Evernote is to put your memory in this trusted thing.
Yep.
That's everywhere. And that was one of the things that you guys brought to the table was instead of just being a Windows shareware program, it's ubiquitous. It's also freemium.
Yeah. Well, Stepan's vision was always to make it everywhere. They just, you know, they'd started on Windows. But the idea, I think we had very similar ideas. That's why we got along well when we met. We pretty much wanted the same thing. So it was a natural fit.
Yeah.
And then we rebuilt it as a new product and a new service, and we launched in summer of 2008. So
the rest is history, and boy, what history! And I never stopped using Evernote, although I have to say it's become a more crowded space than in 2005 or 7.
Mm-hmm. You know, it depends on how you look at it. When we were raising money in 2008. Kind of the worst, you know, part of the financial crisis, and investors would ask me about who our competition was, and I'd say, well, you know, every single computer or phone or device that's ever been released already has a pretty good free note-taking app on it. So
that's true.
Yeah. So I don't think it was ever more crowded than it was when we launched.
I guess you're right. I mean, there was Notepad on Windows. Mm-hmm. Apple had its own whatever it was called, Notes. Mm-hmm. But the things that made that not so useful was they lived only on that system. There was, I guess Notes has at some point got some synchronization capability, but.
Yeah, like Google had Google Notebook at the time.
Yeah. Now they have Keep.
BlackBerry. Yeah.
Which is clearly influenced by Evernote. But Evernote still, as far as I'm concerned, the king because it does so much. How is it that what has been your strategy all along to stay ahead of the competition to continue to make a product that is popular?
Well, it's really been to not look at the competition. So I really don't know what a lot of other companies are doing in our space. We don't spend a lot of time
really
looking at
on. You use OneNote all the time. You must.
I've actually have not used OneNote in about 5 or 6 years.
See, I asked Alan Mulally when he was CEO at Ford what car he drove. He says, "I never drive a Ford. I drive everybody else's car because I want to see what the competition is up to." You don't feel that's useful?
Yeah, but I like my product.
I didn't say that to Alan. What, you got a problem?
I think there's a where we are in the industry.
Yeah,
it's so early days. It's so new.
Wow.
It's a fundamental mistake to think of it as a zero-sum game this early.
Interesting.
Evernote isn't going to get – we're not going to get customers and users by taking them from a competitor.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We're going to get customers and users who, for the most part, weren't really using anything organized before.
Right.
Or they were – or on the enterprise version, they were using some horrible piece of enterprise software.
Right.
So we really just try to focus on making the best product possible, spend all of our energy on that. And maybe in 5 or 10 years, the industry will get so crowded where it literally is a zero-sum game. And in order for us to grow, someone else has to shrink. And then I think we start to really care about other companies. And the car industry is in this position now.
That's right. It is a zero-sum game. That's right.
Yeah, in order for Ford to grow, some other car company has to recede, at least in this market. In developing countries, maybe that's not true. But that's just not the case at all for internet software. So it would be foolish to really focus on competition.
What a great answer. I've actually said the same thing about our business, that we're nowhere near the point where it's a competition yet.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really more like, I really don't like the zero-sum language applied to business. I think it kind of gives you the wrong idea. So whenever people are using sports analogies or war analogies, I think it's sort of weak thinking.
Andy Grove wrote a book, former CEO of Intel, said only the paranoid survive.
Yeah.
You disagree?
Well, yeah. I do. And also, again, different industries. I think semiconductors is probably a little bit more zero-sum, although even there it was a massive growth industry. I think running a startup in our space, it's not like playing baseball. It's not like boxing. It's more like, if anything, it's more like playing in an orchestra. There's other musicians, and they compete with you to some extent, but the competition is what makes you better, and ultimately you need each other to make things together. So it's a very non-zero-sum competition. I think it's more of a creative act, like playing music or writing, than it is a destructive act or a zero-sum act like sports or fighting.
I love that. And by the way, that improves your quality of life a lot. In fact, one of the things that lately has been getting a lot of attention is quality of life in a startup.
Mm.
Both with the Downtown Vegas project, Tony Hsieh's move, and then of course Don Melton on Rene Ritchie's Debug podcast talked about the horrendous lifestyle of Apple middle managers.
Oh, well,
did you read that?
I read about it. I didn't read it.
Yeah.
I know lots of Apple middle managers. They seem generally happy.
Yeah, I mean, in public. But, I mean, he says things like, we were really sad when The Sopranos was canceled because Scott Forstall was a big fan, so we knew we had at least 1 hour every Sunday night we could spend with our family. But as soon as that show was canceled, we knew life would never be the same. Emails in the middle of the night. So that's not the culture surrounding Evernote?
It's hard to say. I certainly do send emails out in the middle of the night. I don't expect people to answer them.
Oh, that's good. That's kind of you.
But I'm up all the time, and especially with the amount of travel that I do.
Right.
But I hope that doesn't. I hope no one is there checking them in the middle of the night.
Right.
it kind of gets to this life's work point. I think the idea is if you think of it as life as being separate from work, then you're going to have this conflict. If you think of them together. And you try to have a job that is sufficiently epic that you want to spend more time in. No matter how much time you're spending on it, you wish you could spend more.
Mm.
then it's great.
Then you're
happier. It may not be fun. It may not be fun day to day. You may not be happy day to day, but it's super fulfilling and it's a lot of fun, you know, week to week and month to month and hopefully decade to decade.
Actually, I think that might be one of the problems with the create happiness mantra at downtown Vegas is that nobody's happy all the time. That's an unreasonable goal. You're not looking for happiness. You're looking for satisfaction. You're looking for meaning.
I'm looking for impact. Yeah, meaning, impact. You know, I want the universe to notice that I'd lived in it. I want to have an impact. I want to move the world a little bit in the direction that I think it should move in. I have specific ideas about what direction so should be, and that's what's satisfying. So the satisfying thing to me is, you know, is when I go to bed after working however many hours I'm working, I feel like I've moved the world a little bit closer to where it should be. And then I've got a plan B, which is basically to like eat as much of the best food as possible.
That's just why you go to Le Web.
Yeah, exactly. In case the rest of it doesn't pan out, had some fantastic meals.
Me too. You're actually looking very svelte. You've been doing something. Have you been weightlifting or something?
I've been living a very stressful life barely leaves time for eating.
Oh, Phillips. Yeah, because you know. There's that great food add-on for Evernote. I love that. That now I understand where that came from. That's you.
Oh, that definitely that was me. That was something I really fought for and championed. And it's been a lot of fun. No, I have been. I actually started riding a bike for the first time. You know, pretty much since I was like 6 years old. I rode a bike and I went out and bought a bike, and now I have it. And so it's fascinating because it's a whole new thing to spend money on. It's like an all new opportunity for gadgets.
Oh,
and
tell me about it.
Out on data. So it's actually quite good.
I'm always looking for some reason to spend money on gadgets. Yeah. Biking, not yet, but maybe. So we're gonna take a break. Phil Libin is our guest. You like Libin or Libin?
Either is fine. I usually say Libin.
Okay. He is the CEO of Evernote and really one of the moving factors in Silicon Valley. I want to talk about the app economy, which emerged after you started and you have certainly embraced. The new Evernote, which I'm looking at right now on the web, the Evernote conference you just had. There's lots to talk about. Mm. More with Phil coming up in just a bit. But first, a word from our friends at Citrix. They do such great work for people in enterprise. And if you are an IT or support professional, I'm sure you've heard of GoToAssist. It is, in fact, the number one worldwide market leader in remote support. They have a bunch of tools. It's all cloud-based tools to help you in your business, whether you're working for a company or working for yourself. In fact, if you're an IT guy working, struggling, and you want to build a managed service provider company, if you want to do more with less, this is a great solution for you. I want you to visit GoToAssist, read up on what they do. It's not just remote support, although they have the best remote support out there. It allows you to support people anytime, anywhere, even from mobile devices. But they also have a service desk app that helps you kind of do the triage that you need to do. Lots of good features, and I want you to try it right now for 30 days free. And when you sign up for GoToAssist, this is something new, and it's only through October 10th, so only a few more days. You're going to be able to get another Citrix product free for 6 months. So go visit, take a look at GoToAssist. I think you're going to want to try it for 30 days free, and you get this extra bonus to pick your Citrix product in 6 months free if you do it before October 10th. GoToAssist.com and sign up to receive this special offer today. I'm not a support guy, but I use GoToAssist with my mom. She says, I love watching the mouse move around on the screen while you're fixing my computer. It's really fun. GoToAssist.com. Try it free for 30 days and get 6 months of another Citrix product free as well. Phil Libin is our guest CEO of Evernote. Okay, let's take a look at the new Evernote. First, actually, before I do that question, no, you can show it, Chad, while I'm doing the tour. You know, a note-taking app in the minds of many should just be simple. How do you balance and simplicity with power? This is the web page. I mean, look how clean this is. And even when you start typing, it gets even cleaner. The menu bar goes away. Is this your response to this challenge of power with simplicity?
Yeah, it really has been a very long evolution for us. If you look at a bunch of the designs, you know, going back years and how they've changed has been this constant struggle of making something simpler.
Yeah.
And the thing we realized a few years ago is that, you know, this kind of the first rule of simplicity is simple is hard. It's really hard to make something simple.
Yes.
There is no second rule of simplicity because that would be
that would be complicated.
That would be a misunderstanding of the rules of simplicity. Simple is hard, and there is no trade-off between simple and powerful. Whenever you're faced with that trade-off, it means you have bad design. So whenever you're sitting in a room and you're saying like, oh, well, if we do this, it'll be simpler, but if we do that, it'll be more complicated but more powerful.
Yeah.
That's a false trade-off. That just means your design sucks. And if you go back and redesign it so that the simplest option is the most powerful one, then you know you've got good design. And that's astonishingly hard to do. And we're getting a little bit better at it. We used to really suck at that. And now I think in at least some of our products, we're getting significantly better. And it's really fun to see us improve.
One of the things you've done is make it quick and easy to enter a note. I use Evernote on every platform, but on Android, for instance, you've got great widgets that I could put on the screen that just says, quick, take a picture or record this. Or
you can do that in iOS 8 now, too.
That's awesome. So when Evernote came out in 2005 and 2007, the iPhone hadn't come out yet.
No.
Did you have a BlackBerry? I don't even remember if you had BlackBerry apps at the time.
Yeah.
You did.
We had Windows Phone.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
We had Palm.
For 6.5. And Palm. I didn't remember that.
Yeah, we had a Palm OS version. And,
so you knew there would be a mobile, especially for a program like this, there'd be a mobile angle.
Well, I didn't know. I hoped.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I people ask, like, how did you guys, like, we you know, because we got mobile phones right and we got app stores right, you know, at least in the beginning. And people are like, man, how did you know? And we didn't. We bet on it. It's like, you know, if you play roulette and you hit, right. It's like, how did you know it was going to be 35,
right.
Whatever color 35 is.
Black. Right.
I didn't. That's just the bets we placed, and we got lucky. So we placed the bets, and we got really lucky, and then we just made the most of it.
Of course, apps became the thing, and you were front and center. In fact, every smartphone I've ever bought, one of the first things I install is Evernote. And now then all my stuff's there, which is nice.
They're going away, I think, apps. I think we're
really?
I think the whole cycle of apps, it's going to be, you know, a decade. It's going to be like the decade of apps, and then that's it.
That happens in the industry. I mean, remember the decade of CD-ROMs?
Yeah, yeah, totally. I think it's going to be, you know, roughly 2008, you know, to about 2017, 2018, and then it's really going to fade away.
Is that why you put all this effort into this HTML5 new web interface? This is the beta, by the way, if you're an Evernote user.
I don't mean that. I don't mean native apps versus HTML stuff. I actually think native apps for a long time are still gonna win. I really mean like the idea that there are apps that you like interact with and choose to launch in a device and spend time with, like apps as kind of an atomic unit of computing, I think it's gonna fade away, which is a big deal. It's gonna be very challenging for app companies to stay relevant when there are no more apps.
What is this because of iOS extensions? What is this going to look like?
Well, you know, I think if you look at kind of every big jump in computing, like from lap, you know, from PCs to mobile, and then from mobile to wearables, like some concepts always become much less relevant. Concepts that used to be super relevant become much less relevant. So, like when you went from PC software. Like when we were designing PC software, your average session length on a PC is like 2 hours.
Right.
So, you know, if you're designing, you know, a word processor for a PC, your goal is like, how do you make someone productive 2 hours at a time, like once a day?
Right.
And so you can deal with a lot of stuff like files and folders and like you just have the time. You've got 2 hours, you know, you've got time to deal with this stuff. When you go on a mobile phone, your average session length drops to like 2 minutes. But instead of once a day, it's like 50 times a day. You know, how do you make someone productive 2 minutes at a time? Or if you're making a video game, how do you make someone entertained 2 minutes at a time? And one of the first things to go are these old ideas of files. Like files are much less relevant on phones than they were on desktops, just because if you've only got 2 minutes, like you're not going to really want to browse through directories and think about that as a concept. But apps became really important because, you know, you've got 2 minute session. That's just enough time to like swipe a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And app. But now when you go to wearables, the average session length is going to go down to seconds. It's going to be like a second and a half, you know, like 1,000 times a day.
You're right. So I'm wearing an Android, the Moto X Android Wear Watch, Moto 360.
Yeah.
In fact, it's starting to talk to me. Stop. Shh. Quiet. And yeah. You do. That's exactly what, in fact, even as I've been talking to you, my daughter called. I swiped her away.
Yep.
My Evernote, I was logging into Evernote, so my code came in on my watch, swiped away. You're right. It literally a couple of seconds.
Yeah. And so you're not going to have apps on it. You're not going to be like,
no.
Swipe.
No, that's
like,
terrible.
That's all silly.
Yeah.
So there's going to be like, you know, you're certainly not going to have files, but I don't even think you're going to have apps. So the whole concept changes dramatically when you have wearables. And it's one of the things that we really try to do over the past year. And we talked about at the conference is, I mean, like, the industry is stuck using some very archaic metaphors. Mm-hmm. And the central problem we have is like the metaphors are old and mm-hmm. broken. Like a file is a bad idea. Mm-hmm. A file is sort of a dumb metaphor. An inbox is a dumb metaphor. The future is something else. And we know a little bit of what it's going to be like, but we know definitely what it's not going to be. And what it's not going to be is apps, files, folders, inboxes, slides.
Sounds like it's more atomic than that.
Maybe more interconnected. You know, there's we're trying a lot of different things. The whole idea, I think, is you don't really have individual tools for specific things. Like, there won't really be a communications tool. Like, you don't really need a phone. You don't need a tool to collaborate. You don't need a tool to communicate. You should communicate and collaborate as part of creating whatever it is that you're doing, and so on. So I think actually the boundaries between these things get knocked down. And apps are typically very sandboxed. There's a lot of sharp boundaries between them, which I think is one of the reasons they won't work in this world. But no one's got the full answer yet.
That was for security, of course, because when we designed mobile phones, we saw all of the horrendous things that had happened on desktop computers because an app had full power. So they got put in these compartments.
Right.
And then we realized, or we're starting to realize, well, that doesn't work too well either, because interoperation, intercommunication is important.
Well, and they fail. It really doesn't work for our industry, for productivity.
Right.
Because the whole point of being productive is like connecting things efficiently. Like, that's what productivity is, right? It's how elegantly and efficiently you can connect the dots. And anything that separates them is counterproductive. So it's a particular challenge in our space.
Is this the most fun part of your job, this kind of big thinking, strategizing, trying to understand what's happening and where we're going?
Definitely talking to you is the most fun part of your job.
You liar. Totally. But I would think, see, this is the kind of stuff I like to think about. And it's hard because we're the frog in the boiling water. We're not, you know, we don't see the environment. We don't see these changes in a global way. We see little bits at a time. That's human nature. You have to force yourself to kind of start thinking more globally.
Yeah, and that's a really interesting balance too, just operationally in terms of how how I spend my day. You know, how much of it is just very much like, what are we going to ship in the next 3 months?
Right.
And sort of, you know, hour by hour, day to day management, and then sometimes you have to come up for air a little bit and try to look a little bit further out into the future.
Loic Lemur says he meditates an hour a day now, and that's that's where he's like planning and big thinking happens. Mm.
That's what he told me that too. He went on like a 10-day retreat, which sounds kind of interesting. So I'd be up for doing that at some point.
Of course, he's kind of semi-retired at this point, so he can do anything he wants.
Well, he's sort of got the international man of leisure
kind
lifestyle.
Kind of made it, yeah. So he can just relax.
It's a life.
I'm so jealous. I love Loic. And he's a great inspiration. And the meditation stuff is a great inspiration. That's what makes
me. He is. And he's been a really good mentor. He was actually one of the first people to find out about Evernote back in like 2008. You know, he was there using it and talking about us. And basically Loic and you. And there's been a couple of other people who were like some of the first ever people who gave us any sort of publicity or credit. And very grateful to all of you guys.
I feel like I'm a bad Evernote user. Like, I don't really use it. I'm not a power user. I just, like, I put my mom's muffin recipe in it. And then I use Evernote every time I bake muffins. It's in my Evernote. I pop it up.
That's a good use case.
I'm not, but I feel like, gosh, that's another problem that you face, which is, of course, it's very easy to get into Evernote because you understand the metaphor. You jot stuff down, and there it is. And it's very quick. You very quickly realize, oh, it's everywhere, which is nice. For somebody like me, I'm a, it's kind of an edge case. I use a lot of different stuff all the time, and Evernote's always there, and all my, my mom's muffin recipe's always there. So that's great. But how do you ease people into becoming more powerful users?
Well, I'll tell you what, like, what I think you're going to start doing in it pretty soon is you're going to start doing all your writing in Evernote. Because what we've done in some of the new releases that either just come out now or coming out over the next couple of months is we've really made it ridiculous to write in anything else. We've really improved the writing in all the editors, so all of the bugs that we used to have, but how to actually format and write, we've sort of cleaned up the vast majority of that. But then we added something which I think is pretty fundamental. Whenever you write in Evernote, as you're writing, it's going to go out with our new context feature and find whatever it is that you need to do to complete that writing and to make it better. And nothing else will do this. And so once you see it work, you're never going to want to write in anything else, because you'll never be confident that if you're writing in any other tool, you actually know fully what's going on. Like, the quality of your writing will be better in Evernote.
That's not here yet.
Next month. What we announced at the show. It's called Context, and it's coming next month. And the whole goal of Evernote, our new position is, you know, we want you to do the best work of your life in Evernote, and we actually want using Evernote to make the quality of your work better.
Talking about bets you made that have paid off, Evernote was a very early use of the cloud.
Yep.
And you didn't say cloud, but in fact, I mean, and you've kind of made me think that, because I write right now on Google Docs. Mm-hmm. And I write in Google Docs because I know that it persists. And so I can launch I can use any hardware I have and continue whatever I was writing.
Yep.
So you're saying people will start thinking of Evernote in that way. This is where I work.
Yeah, it's really like, we want to own the workspace. Like, Evernote is about doing, you know, there's four essential things that a modern knowledge worker does every day, multiple times, and they all feed into each other. And Evernote is about making the modern definition of these four things. And so you write, you collect, you find, you present over and over again. And we are making tools to do that better than any other way that you can.
One other thing, we collaborate. One of the reasons I use Google Docs is for all our shows, for instance, we use Google Sheets for the rundown, because then everybody can see it.
Yeah, and I think that's actually a really... like, that's a big debate we had. So we came up with these sort of four verbs, right? The four things that Evernote does. It's, you know, write, collect, find, and present. And everyone always said, well, what about a fifth one? What about collaborate? And it's not, I don't think that's a fifth thing, because that collaboration is not a separate thing. It's not a separate tool. This is the old telephone metaphor where you need something else to collaborate. Actually, collaboration happens inherently as part of these other four things. Like, you can't, when you write, you're collaborating. Just as part of writing. When you're finding things, you're collaborating. When you're collecting, you're collaborating. Collaboration and context, the way that we've created it now, what we announced a couple of days ago and what we're going to launch next month, is inherently part of the fabric of everything that you do in Evernote. It's not an add-on thing.
There'll be document sharing? I mean, what's that going to look like? Document sharing? What is it?
So you can share any notes or notebooks just, you know, with one click, but you can also talk right inside.
Oh, I like that.
Evernote. You can talk right inside of Evernote, and it'll suggest, based on what you're doing, it'll suggest who you should be communicating with, and it'll show you other things, you know, previous versions of notes that are relevant to the subject, versions from your coworkers, external news sources who actually go and pull, you know, business and financial and technical news that's relevant to what you're doing. So as you're working, you're seeing the big picture, which all context. And you can automatically collaborate with and talk to anyone, whether they're in Evernote or not, which is, we're calling work chat. And it's a really major step forward for us. It's definitely the biggest, it's definitely the most ambitious thing we've done so far in the history of the company.
It's kind of like Google Wave. It should just sense what you're doing and offer you the capability that you need most at this moment.
I think I vaguely remember what Google Wave was.
That was the thing I liked, was this kind of freeform document and simultaneous, and sounds like, and of course it was a failure.
Well, you know, it was maybe ahead of its time, right?
Like, it was a great idea.
A lot of the core Evernote team, you know, as we discussed last time, actually go back to the Apple Newton days.
Yeah, right?
We've got tons of people who worked in the Newton,
and
right? That was a big example. Yeah. That was fantastic technology. That was just 20 years ahead of its time.
And General Magic before that.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and this is all done server side. It has to be, because you don't know the capabilities of any particular device.
You know, it's both. So we really have this we have a very hybrid model where we, for the most part, have all native clients, except the web version, which you're looking at right now. But all of our downloadable clients are fully native, and they're talking to the server in kind of quasi-real time. And so there's a bunch of stuff that's done server-side. There's a bunch of stuff that's done client-side. You know, we design the user experience first without really paying attention to where the actual computing is going to happen, and then we just divide up the work based on, you know, the capabilities of each.
Chat room's worried it's going to be like Clippy. I see you're making a note.
So Clippy is another really good example of something that was way ahead of its time.
Yeah. It wasn't a bad idea. It was a bad implementation.
It wasn't a bad idea. It was just very bad character design. It's really the eyebrows. It's the eyebrows in that paperclip at the moon.
But I have to say, it's obvious that you've talked to people who write, because when I'm in the web app, this is the beta of the web app. It's so clean as I start typing. Everything right. kind of fades to the background, and I can yep. really – and this is what writers want. I can really focus on what I'm writing. But then as I move to different parts, different pieces of this come alive – and suddenly I can do other things. And you're saying it might even say, hey, Chad should know about this. Would you like me to share this with Chad? Or Chad could start chatting with me? Or
yep.
here's a note you took 3 years ago on this topic.
Or here's an article from the Wall Street Journal talking about this from 3 days ago.
Wow.
So it'll pull up notes, your notes, your coworkers' notes, LinkedIn connections.
Wow.
And news from the Wall Street Journal and from other publishers.
Are you making deals with these publishers to incorporate
this? Yeah, we announced a big partnership with Dow Jones. So we have the full copy of the journal ad-free inside Whoa. Of Evernote for premium users for in context. So you can see articles relevant to what you're working on. And there's other publishers as well. I think it's basically, look at it this way. I think the central problem we have is really a metaphor problem. Like, about 35 years ago, the people who made our industry, the people who kind of made productivity software first, had this really colossal challenge where they needed to take the human race, who for the most part had no idea what computers were or what digital was, and you had to bring all these people who had no idea what technology was into the digital age. And so to do that, like, they reached for these very, very physical, directly cognitively skeuomorphic metaphors like desktop and file. And typewriter and, filing cabinet and slide projector. And this was completely understandable, like, back then, because you needed some way to explain these concepts. But it's been 35 years. We've had more than a generation of people. And the idea of a filing cabinet hasn't changed. Like, basically, you had the idea of a typewriter hasn't changed. You know, so first you had a typewriter, and then you had Microsoft Word, which was a typewriter inside of your computer. And then you had Google Docs, which was a typewriter inside of a web browser. But the question is, like, is the typewriter the right metaphor?
Right.
Do we need a typewriter in a cloud? Do we need a filing cabinet in a cloud?
We can be digital native now. Everybody gets it.
And the concepts are wrong. Like,
right.
The concept of the inbox is a really, really harmful and bad concept.
Horrible.
Like, the inbox is a list of things that you're already behind on, sorted in the wrong order.
It's a nightmare. Chronological.
Right. We all put up with it.
Right.
And it's terrible. And so, like, we should get rid of the metaphors. We shouldn't try to modernize the metaphors by putting them in the cloud. We should get rid of the metaphors. We should have new metaphors
yes.
that let us be as productive as possible.
And where are you going to get these? Are you just thinking them up? Do you have people that you're inspired by, like Dave Allen? Where does this come from?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, my core skill is putting together other people's good ideas. So I like to surround myself with people who are much smarter and more creative than I am. And I remember everything they say. And I'll, like, pick up a piece over here. And then 3 years later, I may hear something else. And, like, all of a sudden, you know, there's a spark and it makes sense. So I actually come up with very few ideas myself. But I'm pretty good as an editor of kind of combining smarter people's good ideas into, you know, into products.
I'm already looking at the chat room, and they have, like, 20 feature requests. How do you incorporate that kind of – I'm sure you get those all the time.
Yeah, you know, we look at all that stuff. User feedback is a really interesting thing. It's super great for one thing, which is to tell you what you screwed up. People are naturally gifted at complaining. they really let you know all the things that you screwed up, and that's really valuable. And so we take that really very seriously. User feedback is less useful in figuring out what you should do next.
Right.
Although when you have as many users as we do, you know, we have more than 100 million users. Some of those people are actually world-class product designers, and so we do occasionally get startlingly good ideas from the user community. And so it's we take that stuff very seriously. But like just for you specifically, like you are our target audience, right? And you, Leo, and you're not using Evernote as much as you should be. And you're
I
not
feel
right.
guilty. I should be using it more. Yes.
Well, wait until next month. But here's how you should think about it. Like when you're writing right now, in Google Docs or whatever, like. It's a typewriter in your browser.
Yes.
And what are the things that it's showing you? It's showing you things like margins and like font sizes.
I don't care about that. No.
Are you ever going to print something out?
Right. No.
Like, the idea, the metaphor, anything that starts out looking like a blank sheet of paper is the wrong idea because you don't need a sheet of paper anymore. Unless you're going to print out like I lost my cat posters and stick them around your neighborhood, you just don't need it. So all of the traditional ideas are low impact ideas about what a typewriter should be.
That's right.
So what we did is we got rid of all of the stuff about margins and printing and all that stuff. Well, we didn't get rid of it, but we really like hit it so that only when you really need it do you see it. Instead, we said, well, what do you really want to see when you're writing? Well, what you really want to see is, are you writing the right things? Are you missing some important facts? Does someone you know have something to contribute? Who should you be talking to about this? How do you instantly talk with your editor or with somebody else or with your collaborator? So by like freeing up conceptually, like getting rid of this idea that it's a typewriter and therefore it's paper, saying it's not about that. It's about actual writing and combining research as part of writing and communication as part of writing. You have a writing system right now, which is just infinitely more powerful than with the old metaphors. And I think you'll use Evernote for writing because of that.
Well, I'm open to it.
Well, give it a shot in a month or so. Let me know what you think.
I will. We're going to take a break. Phil Libin is our guest CEO of Evernote, visionary and creator. And we're talking about a product, but also talking about, and I want to get back to this idea of what the new metaphor for computing is, what the new meme is, whatever you might call it. Instead of apps, what's next? But first, it's snack time. I wish I could send you a snack, Phil. I bet you would love.
Yeah, I need a snack.
A snack. You know, this is a problem in business. People go to the snack machine and they eat a candy bar and then they are, you know, dead for the rest of the day. We, on the other hand, provide our employees with NatureBox. NatureBox now has a business subscription, which is even cooler for businesses and for homes, too. It's awesome snacks delivered monthly to your door, three different sizes of boxes, hundreds of different snacks in savory, sweet, and spicy flavors. They also will provide, vegan snacks if you're vegan or gluten conscious. You'll no added sugar snacks. And all of them, nutritionist approved, healthy, no artificial flavors, artificial colors, no high fructose corn syrup, 0 grams of trans fats, just the good stuff. I have in my hand praline pumpkin seeds. These are awesome. Pistachio power clusters, tart and tangy fruit medley, blueberry nom noms, which we really have all declared here at Twit our favorites, mini blueberry flavored oat cookies. Anyway, these are great. They're resealable packages, so you can eat healthy. Have just one if you wish. Good luck. I just am a big fan, and I want you to try it right now. You get a free trial. This is something new we're trying out here. NatureBox.com/Twit. They'll send you a box. Taste some of these. Because you know what? They know. First one's free, kid. They know. You will get more. These are awesome. And if you're a business, take a look at Nature Box for Business, too. Because we are now up to like 10 boxes a month or something because our staff loves them. NatureBox.com/twit. And if I had a way to get this to you, and I'm sure the new Evernote will, I would send you a snack over Evernote.
Emily, I am starving now. I want that paper box.
Well, lunch is coming up any minute.
Oh.
Do you have different teams doing the Android version, the iOS version, the web version? What's the structure of development?
Yeah, we have different teams, lots of them, basically each one doing a different version.
Okay, I guess it's a very special skill set, but you must give them a lot of direction because there is a uniformity across the UI.
You know, it's getting better and better. We actually never go for uniformity. We don't like consistency isn't the goal.
Yeah.
And certainly uniformity isn't the goal. The goal is really excellence. So we say we really want the consistency to be an emergent property of excellence. Like we want the products to be good enough where they feel natural. And so when you're using it on your Android phone, it feels natural.
That's true.
When you're using it on your iPhone, the two are actually nothing alike.
Yes.
But they're both understandable and they feel the same because the core ideas are the same and they're both good. So we don't try to have any kind of lowest common denominator uniformity because then I think you just get crappy products. So yeah, we have multiple teams and they kind of compete with each other for good ideas and they write everything native. And it's a difficult process. We spend a ton on engineering, but that makes the products better. And I think you just need to have the best products at this point.
Yeah, I, and then there are specific things that are platform specific, like Android Wear.
Mm-hmm.
I presume that Evernote will integrate. I would love to be able to say, see, right now, and I don't know if this is a Google thing or what, but that, you know, if I say take a note, it's going to launch Google Keep.
No, you can set it for Evernote.
I can.
Yeah, on your phone, once you've got Evernote installed and on your Android Wear, you can definitely set that.
Okay.
Set that, take a note to Evernote. But, you know, my issue with that is I really, like, I don't want to talk to my watch.
I don't mind.
I really don't.
I wish it understood me.
Well, like, my Google, my Android Wear watch, like, really wants me to talk to it.
Yeah.
It's, like, sort of desperate to get me to talk to it. And
yeah.
I really don't. Like not.
Come on, Phil. Let's talk.
Yeah, it's like it wants me to. It's like it wants me to say its name. It wants me to say, "Okay, Google."
Do you look at things like that and say, "Like they ought to know better"?
I am a huge fan of wearable stuff,
yeah.
And I we've got versions for every device, and we're actively working on it. Like
you've got it for glass, right?
Got glass.
Yeah.
We got Pebble. We got Android Wear. We got all the Samsung stuff. We're going crazy with Apple Watch.
But that's just your. Tell me. Tell me about that Apple Watch.
We are spending a lot of time and energy making designs for whatever it is going to be on Apple Watch, and we very much hope to have something great as soon as it launches.
It'd be foolish of them not to have Evernote on the Apple Watch the day it ships.
We really hope that we're there. We don't know the details at this point, but we have tons of ideas. And I think the Apple Watch is going to really make this industry go mainstream. Like up to now, it's been very much like when we were building stuff for wearables. Now we're building it for me. We're building it for nerds.
Yeah.
Which is fine. That's a good way to practice. But I think building it for Apple and then the devices that are going to come subsequent to the Apple Watch, I think are now mainstream, so it's going to be a big jump.
Has it been your experience that nerds get what you're doing better than the real world?
You know, a lot of the early adopters, I think, are nerds. You know, I'm a nerd. Everything we make, like I'm kind of the primary user. Mm-hmm. At this point, I think with the numbers that we have, I think we're sort of early mainstream. Like I think we're past the early adopter cycle, and I think we're sort of in the early mainstream. And I think the way that the world is wired up right now, everyone's a nerd about something. Like, you know, you could be a tech nerd, or you could be a food nerd, and like this is what the internet has made really great at. Like everyone's a nerd about something, and Evernote is a great tool for nerds of any type. And I think actually nerds may become the mainstream.
I think you're right. I like that. I like that. We're talking to Phil Libin. He's the CEO of Evernote and really one of the great people to talk to. I've always enjoyed talking to Phil.
Well, thank you.
It's very kind. One of the other bets you made that was genius long before the market realized it, freemium. Evernote's always been freemium.
Yeah.
You give it away and you get like 90% of the functionality for free.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I don't even know what I get extra by paying. The mm-hmm. reason I pay is more because I love it so much, and I just want to give you my whatever it is. I think it's a yearly, what is it, $50 a year? I can't even remember.
Yeah, it's like $45 a year.
I give it to you because I love this thing, and I want it to be everywhere.
Well, thank you, Leo.
And I think I suspect that that's true. I mean, I suppose some people look at the premium features and go, well, I need that one. But I don't even know what they are.
And we're adding more and more. Both premium and free features. But, you know, our business model is really, our central business model is direct. Like, we believe in only direct revenue, which means we only make money when a user decides to pay us for something.
That's critical in this day and age of privacy. Again, another smart thing you did years ago.
Right. And so it's so we have three revenue streams, but they're all direct. So freemium is the first one we had. And then we added Evernote Business, which is our business version, which is not companies just pay for that. And then we have the Evernote Market, the partnered physical goods. And those are, again, those are just things we sell. And what these three revenue streams have in common is they're all the same model. They're all just old-fashioned, honest, direct revenue. Like, we make money when you pay us, and that's it. And we don't show ads, and we don't try to data mine you in any way. We're not a big data company. We have no ulterior motive other than providing a product that's good enough that people buy. And I think that model is going to become more and more important over the next few years.
You need to publicize that more. I think you're exactly right. And Apple's clearly realized this is our big selling point. Mm-hmm. Tim Cook's just recently, I've been telling this for a long time, taken the offensive and said, no, you're not the product.
You're not the product, yeah. And we've been saying that, I mean, ever since the whole, like, you're the product meme came out about 6 or 7 years ago, we've said, no, you're not the product.
Right.
The product is the product. You're the customer. And we make money when you decide to pay us. And I think, I think wearables are really going to put this to a point.
Yeah, because they know everything.
I'm not going to tolerate a single pixel of my eyeball being used for an ad. I'm not going to tolerate any ads on my watch.
Nope.
I'm not going to tolerate any data that's gathered from my body or from my personal devices being used to advertise me anything. Even though these devices are going to produce a ton of data, which is sort of like a bonanza for marketers and for advertisers, I'm not going to put up with it myself. Other people may, but I'm not. And certainly for productivity, like, it's one thing if this is about entertainment, but for productivity, like, Evernote's goal is to make you more productive. It's the exact opposite of an indirect business model. Like, we in order to make you more productive, we can't be distracting you with ads. We can't be doing data mining. We can't be selling your data. No one would ever trust us. And we would become less productive. So the fundamental thing for us is direct-only revenue. And I think that model is going to get more and more important as trends mature over the next few years. But there'll always be, you know, ad-supported companies. And that makes total sense in media and in other areas. But I don't think it makes any sense in our space.
So you, even though you certainly have a lot of data about your users, you don't use that in any way, internally or externally?
We don't do anything with user data other than the basics for running the system. You know, we have to back it up, put it on network, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And all of our augmented intelligence functions, all of our AI functions are looking at the data that you have algorithmically to try to figure out, you know, what other nodes to suggest, kind of how to help you organize and do things. But that's all for the user. Like, that never leaves the confines of, like, the user's account. There's no, like, cross-user looking. No one at Evernote ever sees it. No partners ever see it. So it's basically the goal of our AI features is really to benefit the end user and only the end user. And the way we develop them is with that in mind.
But I'm just looking at the t-shirts that say forgetting sucks. I like that. As I get older, that t-shirt becomes more apropos. And you're on the right side of the demographic curve, because all us baby boomers, we need something to put our stuff in so we don't forget.
Yeah, I think all of us do. I think all of us are knowledge workers at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And like, the central thing that unites this really fast demographic worldwide is, you know, what makes us happy is how elegantly we can deal with the flood of information that's coming at us every day. And our Evernote's goal is to help you deal with information and details a bit more elegantly.
You even sell socks. I don't understand that, but Evernote socks?
Business socks.
Business socks.
I don't know, business socks.
Oh, I get it. Business socks. Okay.
Well, so nobody gets it. When we launched it like a year ago, we wanted like a joke item in the market.
That's
we
it.
We put out a bunch of stuff. We wanted the joke item. So this is a Flight of the Conchords joke.
Oh, I like it. Yes. It's business time.
Business time. That's right. There are no business socks, which are fantastically good socks, and we always sell out of them. They're basically constantly
They're
sold
great
out.
Great socks.
They're really good. But yes, this is not an
it's
not an
business
entirely
time.
All right.
Oh, Phil. one more break, and we're going to wrap things up. Phil Libman is our guest, CEO of Evernote. Your questions next, and we have a lot of people's. Somebody keeps saying something about, I want better organizational tools. I want stacks for my notes. I'm not sure what he's talking about. But I'm sure you get a lot of, you know, feature, I want this. And feature creep's got to be a really big issue for you. It's very tempting, I'm sure, to put everything in.
It is, yeah. It's a focus is hard.
Yeah, that's what Steve Jobs said. He said, you got to learn to say no.
Yeah. We've got a different take on that. But
pardon me?
We've got a little bit of a different take on that.
What's your take on it?
It's not about saying no to things. It's about saying yes to things that are sufficiently epic that they are so awesome to work on. And they would obviously make such a huge difference that all of the lesser important stuff, even if you don't say no to them, you basically never have any time to work on them.
Yeah.
So it's really about, it's not about cutting. It's about finding the amazingly epic things to work on and then just getting everyone working on them.
Must be exciting. That's what you want in life. It's not, I want fewer hours or, you know, it's, I want to be working on something that makes a difference.
I want to be working on something where even if I just work 16 hours a day on it, I wish I had 18 hours.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm
the
so
problem
excited
is not,
about this.
Yeah. I want to be doing more. I want to spend more of my life at it. And if I'm working on something that I don't feel that way about, then I'm working on the wrong thing.
I got to say, there's something, I'm going to tell you something epic in my life. Audible.com. Time for an ad.
Nice. <segue. laughs>
It is epic, though. In the year 2000, I was commuting an hour to two each way, up to 4 hours a day to Tech TV, losing my mind, falling asleep. And then I discovered audiobooks from Audible, and I've been a member since February 2000, and it has changed my life. Audible, first of all, I had audiobooks before on cassettes. Audible lets you download the book the minute you need it. When I, you know, we went to London last week, I needed a book for the airplane. I got it. I can get it at the airport. Boom, like that. So many books, too. 150,000 titles now at Audible. Bestsellers, fiction, nonfiction. I alternate. This is just how I work. Between fiction and nonfiction. In fact, let me go to my Audible library. I have over 500 books in my library. Another nice thing about Audible, once you buy a book, it's yours, and it's in your library. You can listen to it anytime, you know, you want. So I'm listening to, I can't wait, my next book, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. Then a book that Andy Nocco recommended, The Island at the Center of the World, The Epic Story of Dutch Manhattan, see a little nonfiction. Gone Girl, I got to finish that before the movie comes out. A book by the original behavioral economist, Daniel Kahneman, called Thinking Fast and Slow. Yeah, this is an inspirational book. This is a book everybody needs to read. But
yeah.
This is the point. The Goldfinch, I'm just finishing that, great novel. Then Graham Nash's autobiography, because I love rock and roll autobiographies. I don't know why. The Martian. So many great books. I want to give you one for free. Here's what you do. Go to audiblepodcast.com/triangulation. You're going to be signing up for the Gold account. That's the book a month subscription. But your first month's free. You get the a credit towards any one of those books in the Audible library, 150,000 titles. You also get the Daily Digest of the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times, so you get smarter as you're going to and from work or on the treadmill at the gym or you know, walking the dog, doing the housework. And if you decide, hey, it's not for me, after 30 days, cancel. In the first 30 days, you pay nothing. The book's yours to keep. And it's you've had your free trial. Because we know, you know, some of you may be saying, well, I don't know. Is this a good way to read? Yes, it is for me. audiblepodcast.com/triangulation. Try it free today. When we were in London, I saw the there were Audible posters in the tube in the underground, and the slogan for Audible in the underground is "There's always time to listen." I like it. audiblepodcast.com/triangulation. Give it a try today. Phil Libin is our guest, the man who invented business socks, and no, actually, he didn't.
No, it was Flight of the Conchords.
Yeah, Flight of the Conchords invented business stocks. Evernote. Okay, so the Evernote conference, you announced this new. I can't wait. This is a little bit. It reminded me a little bit of Scrivener, which is a Mac app that Andy Iannocco loves, where you take notes, you do your research, and then you have your writing over here. But this is automatic. It kind of does it for you. I love that idea. And that will that be only on the web, or will that be on the apps too?
No, it'll be in all the apps. It'll actually start on Mac. And iOS, and it'll make it to everything else. I think it'll be the main thing that when you write, you actually want.
You know, I have the app. I've always had the app on the Mac, but lately I just use the Chrome plugin a lot.
Mm. Yeah, the The web clipper is great, Chrome, and there's a new Mac version that came out a few days ago. That's really nice. It's much faster.
Yes.
It takes a little bit of time to index all your notes when you download it because it's basically entirely changed what's under the hood to make something that's radically faster than it was before. And then there's a beautiful redesign coming for Yosemite.
Oh, good.
In a few weeks or whenever.
Oh, good.
Which will be super nice.
Anything else you wanted to share with us about what's coming?
Well, we announced like 20 new things that are all happening between now and the end of the year.
Oh, wow.
We have a beautiful new app called Scannable, which is the shirt I'm wearing.
Let's see. It looks like a butterfly.
Yeah, it's a really nice kind of folded paper butterfly. It's a really great scanner app. So it's a iOS at first app and lets you just scan any documents.
By taking a picture of it.
Yeah, but you don't even have to push any buttons. You basically just hold the phone and then just put documents underneath it. And it automatically takes pictures, categorizes them.
OCR?
OCRs them, does everything you want.
That's one thing I've always liked is that if there's text in a picture, I take it. That's a premium feature, right?
Most of that is available for free. I think for premium, you get multi-page PDFs, OCR multi-page PDFs.
See, I told you. I don't know what I'm getting. I just know I love it.
The app is nice, scannable. But the cool thing it does is it also controls our desktop scanner. We sell the ScanSnap.
Everyone, I love the ScanSnap. I have one, yeah.
Well, this app, it makes that perfect because now you can walk up to the scanner with the app and push the button on your phone and it scans directly to your phone, to your account. So it turns the scanner immediately into a multi-user scanner.
Mm.
You can have one in the office and then anyone can walk up to it with the app and scan directly to their app. So
I'm going to set up my ScanSnap here in the office. We'll just have it set up and anybody can use it. That's a great idea.
It turns it from a single person scanner instantly into a multi-user work scanner, and it's really nice.
Fantastic. Skitch, you were on an acquisition spree. You acquired Skitch, Penultimate, which was the great note-taking app for iOS.
Right.
But you haven't really folded those into the big app. They just kind of interoperate. Is that the plan? Is that how you're going to do it going forward?
Yeah, there's a lot of the team members on those apps and a lot of the technology makes it into the Evernote app and vice versa. I really don't care kind of which app things are in. I just want the overall experience to be great. So there's some things that make a lot more sense in separate apps just to make them really fast. So like Skitch, for example, especially with iOS 8, the extension is really what we were after. Like you want to be able to really, really quickly sketch up any image on the phone and then not even necessarily put it in Evernote. Like you may just want to sketch something up and send it. So you can do that now. So that makes sense outside of the app. But if you're in Evernote and you want to, annotate a PDF or something, you can do that directly in Evernote using the same sketch library, the same sketch technology. So we've been integrating aspects of it where it makes sense and keeping them separate where thought that was better.
Extensions have to be huge for you on iOS.
Yeah, extensions are a really big deal. The web clipper works great now on iOS. That was our most requested feature is mobile web clipping. And now, if we have the new version of Evernote for iOS 8.
If I'm in Safari, is there will it be in the share sheet? Where will it show up?
You just enable it in the share sheet. And it's not just in Safari. It'll appear in Safari, but it'll appear everywhere. Like it'll appear in maps. It'll appear in photos, like from anywhere. You can just take a clip from pretty much any apps that have the modern share extensions you can use.
So this is kind of part of your vision of the appless future, is that everything – I still don't know what that's going to look like.
Yeah, I think you have services. So I think Evernote as a brand, Evernote as a service is still something that users will be aware of. So you sign up for Evernote, you use Evernote.
Right.
And then
but it's not necessarily Evernote, an app. It's just Evernote. Evernote just everywhere.
Exactly. And then Evernote knows which devices you're looking at any time and does the right thing. So it knows when you've if you've glanced at your smartwatch to see some contact and then you take out your phone, we know that, the app should know that you just looked at your watch. And it should know what you saw. And when you take your phone out, it should show you the bigger version of what you just saw in the watch. And so on. The whole point is you'll have, in a single session, you will be interacting with multiple devices at the same time.
Right.
You won't have time to start apps on them. It'll just be you will subscribe to a handful of services, and I think Evernote will be one of them, and there'll be others that are just sort of these ubiquitous services. And the services will just interact with all of your devices as it makes sense.
I have to think Apple and you are kind of in sync because of continuity. and the handoff features that allow you in the new Yosemite when it comes out this month and iOS 8 to kind of move seamlessly between Apple hardware devices is the same idea.
Yeah, I think a lot of these concepts are very similar. You know, we've been letting you sort of hand things off between multiple platforms and multiple devices for a while. Continuity does it really smoothly among Apple hardware. We'll be taking advantage of that as well with Yosemite. It's fun to see a lot of the industry kind of going in this direction.
Yeah.
Basically, look, progress is all about knocking down barriers. Like, technological progress, for the most part, is about taking things that used to be separated out of technical necessity and eliminating the separation so that things become more powerful because they become more seamlessly and more elegantly joined together. That's where all this is going.
Should I worry that you have all my data? My data is not encrypted on your servers unless I turn... I can encrypt an individual node.
You can encrypt portions of nodes or text on your client, and then that's actually encrypted, and we never see it.
That's trust no one encryption because I have the keys, and you get just gobbledygook.
Right, we get nothing, and then all of your data is encrypted in transit, so it's full SSL between all the clients and servers and amongst our servers. But when it's actually sitting on the hard drives, just like with almost everything, it's the servers themselves are protected and encrypted, but the data on it isn't, because otherwise we wouldn't be able to index it. So you wouldn't be able to have any of these cool features if it was actually encrypted at rest. We're working on a bunch of really cool encryption features that will make it easier to use the client-side encryption that we currently have. So you'll be able to much more easily choose what you want encrypted and invisible even to the Evernote servers. But right now it's a manual process.
Yeah. No, in fact, I use LastPass as my secure store. So Evernote I trust with serial numbers, stuff like that. That's kind of, I don't really care. But important stuff like my social security number, my passports, those are all in LastPass.
Yeah, I mean, if you encrypt at client side in Evernote, that security is at least as good as
Is it strong encryption?
Yeah. Yeah, it's strong encryption, and all you have to do is... on the Mac, you just select what you want to encrypt it and right-click and say encrypt, and that encrypts it, and we won't be able to see it.
I'd love to see an easier way to do that, because I probably would use Evernote more for some of that more private stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The challenge is to find the balance between letting you encrypt things easily but still allowing you to search through everything.
And your functionality requires that you can see the data and index it at least. Yeah.
Right. The good news is that most of the things that are actually sensitive is the things that you search for, not the things that you search by, right? So, like, you rarely type in a credit card number to search for it.
Right.
Right? Like, why would you? If you knew how to type it in, then you would remember it. So you could encrypt a credit card number, but you would leave unencrypted, like, the name, like, the words, credit card number.
That's so what that, I always did. I had social security numbers. I would encrypt the numbers, but I just would search for SSN.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that was the tag, and then I would be able to find it. And then I unencrypt it, read it, and then re-encrypt it.
So that approach works well, and you can do that now in Evernote. We're going to make the UI for that really, really pretty elegant.
Because that's what people want now, don't they? That kind of privacy. Well,
yeah, I mean, and it's important to have it.
But people also need to understand there's some stuff that doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter if pictures of my lunch are on Evernote servers unencrypted. That's okay.
Right. Depends on what you eat for lunch, I guess.
I guess. Phil Libin is the CEO of Evernote. If you ought to have this on every device. Frankly, I don't know why it doesn't just come with every device. Google, Apple, Microsoft, they should just all put Evernote there. I guess they all compete with it. That's why they don't. But you know what?
No, some of them do.
Some of them do?
Yeah.
Good. Good. I mean, Google wants to use Keep. Use Evernote. Apple wants to use Notepad. Use Evernote.
You know, Google and Apple are our best partners. I mean, we all have overlapping and competitive, products, but they also, we support the platforms. We do tons of stuff together. They're promoting us. I mean, we wouldn't be here without Apple and without Google.
Yeah.
And even without Microsoft. Like, these are all, business isn't, it's not a zero-sum game. Like, you compete with people, you partner with people. Very often they're the same people. I'd rather wake up in the morning and think, like, what kind of awesome stuff can we do with Google or with Apple or with Microsoft? Not, how are we going to survive competition? Because it just doesn't worry. It doesn't help you worrying about competition. It does help you thinking about what kind of epic stuff can you do with as many partners as possible.
He always takes the high road, everybody. Phil Libin. Great to talk to you, Phil.
Great to talk to you, Leo.
Thanks for joining us. Evernote.com. That's all you need to know. Just get it. Get the free one. everybody can try it for free. And I have to tell you, 90, I don't know what percentage of the functionality, almost all the functionality is there for free. You have to pay for the socks. Business socks are not free.
No, they're not. they're a premium product.
Do you get Evernote Premium if you buy enough socks?
You know, you don't. The socks really stand on their own.
The Moleskine, you get a little bit of premium for the buying the notebook, but not the socks. No.
And we introduced a new notebook the other day.
Tell me about it.
So we have a planner.
I saw that.
It's cool. So you basically get one page for each week with the days labeled, and then the facing page is notes. And when you take a picture, Evernote automatically recognizes what the dates are and puts them into the right place in Evernote. So you can use your day planner, sort of a combination of paper and digital. It's kind of neat.
I saw the other day, I can't remember, I think it was in London, somebody had a day planner. And I thought, how Victorian. And yet I kind of miss it. It's kind of, there's something about it. You go to the day, there's what you got to do. It's very straightforward.
Yeah. Well, this one, you still have that experience of having physical day planner and writing on it, which is sort of a nice meditative experience.
I agree.
Sort of calms me down, lets me focus on things. But then you also, it's all becomes digital in Evernote. So it's the best of both worlds.
I might have to buy this. Every year for a long time, I took, all the classes and getting things done. And every year I would buy without fail whatever the current thing is, the Philos, the faxes, and then I'd use it for a month. And I have Evernote. Thank you, Phil.
Thanks, Leo.
Good to talk to you again. Take care. Phil Leibman, Evernote.com. We do triangulation every Monday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. I just love it because we get to talk to such interesting people and we can kind of take our time. I hope you enjoy it. If you can watch live, the chat room, always useful, always helpful. And you have to watch live for that. But if you can't watch live, on-demand audio and video is always available after the fact. Twit.tv, our website, /TRI. YouTube.com/triangulation. Two places you can get it. You can subscribe in iTunes or whatever you use for watching. I don't want to use the word podcasts. Internet broadcasts. And you can get it every week, and then you won't miss an episode. Thanks for joining us. And we'll see you next time on Triangulation. Bye-bye.